The Supreme Self is formed by the word that, which has Maya illusion as its disguise, which is the source of the world, which is invested with the quality of omniscience, omnipresent, etc., which is mixed with the indirectness and which is reality itself. And that which is the shelter of the I experience and of the word I, and whose knowledge about his own inner being is false, is called by the word thou, tvam. The Supreme has Maya or illusion as its disguise, and the Self has ignorance as its disguise. Being shorn of them, only the Supreme Self remains, which is indivisible, Sat, Chit, Anand, existence, consciousness, and bliss.
Upanishads do not believe in a personal God. Neither they believe in any personal relationship with the divine. They say personal relationship is impossible, inconceivable. Why? Because Upanishads say personality itself is illusory. Try to understand this. I am a person. It means I am separate from the existence. Personality means separation. I cannot be a person if I am not defined. I cannot be a person if I am not different. I cannot be a person if I am not separate. Personality exists as an island, defined, demarked, different, separate. Upanishads say personalities are false. You only appear to be persons, you are not. The inner being is impersonal. It has no limitations, no boundaries. It nowhere begins and nowhere ends. It goes on and on to the infinite. It is infinite and eternal. In space and in time both, it is undefined, undifferentiated. It is not separate like an island. This word personality is very beautiful. We don't have such a beautiful word in Sanskrit or Hindi. This word personality comes from a Greek root, which means mask. The Greek root is persona. Persona means mask. Actors used it to deceive or to create an impression of some face in drama. The original word means just a mask, a face, artificial. So if you are playing in the drama, acting as Ram, you can use a false face, which gives the impression that you are Ram. Inside, you are not Ram, only the face is Ram. The word personality comes from persona. We all have personalities which are simply masks. Inside, there is no person at all. Inside, you are just eternal energy. Infinite energy. Outside you have a face. That face is not you. That face is just like any mask in any drama. The world is a great drama and you have faces to play. And that's why one face is not enough. The drama is so long and so big and multidimensional. So everyone has many faces. You are not one person, you are many persons together. When you are talking to your friend, you have a different face. You are not the same person. When you are encountering your enemy, you have a different face. This is not the same face. You are with your beloved. This is a different face. And you are with your wife. This is a different face. You can look. A couple is going. You can say whether they are husband and wife or not. If they are happy, they are not. If they feel blissful, ecstatic, they are not. The man must be moving with someone else's wife. With one's own wife, it is a suffering, a pain, a burden, a duty. Any duty becomes a burden. It is not fun. It is not play. Look at a person moving with his wife. He cannot look here and there. If a beautiful woman passes, he will remain a monk. Then you can know the man is moving with his wife, because the wife is observing every moment. Where you are looking, why you are looking, and he will have to explain everything back home. Of course, no explanation is ever accepted, but still, explanations have to be given. You are talking to your servant. Look your face into the mirror. You are talking to your boss. Look at your tail, which is absent, but it's still working, wagging. It is not there, but it is there. Man has many faces, has two, because every moment you need a new face. And more civilized, more faces. And more civilized and cultured, it is more easy to change faces immediately. Really, you are not even aware that you go on changing faces. The whole thing has become automatic. So personality is not personality, really personalities. Every man is many men, a crowd inside. And many faces constantly changing, moment to moment. But are you your faces? In Zen, in Japan, whenever a seeker comes to a master, the master says to him, meditate. And this is the object of your meditation. I give you this object for your meditation. Find out your original face. Original face. Find out how you looked before you were born. Or find out how you will look when you have died. Find out your original face, which is yours, not for others. Our all faces are for others. Have you any face of your own? You cannot have. Because faces are basically for others. You need not them for yourself. There is no need. You are faceless. Really, the original face is faceless. You have no face inside. All faces are outside. They are for others, meant to be for others. Upanishads say that you are impersonal inside. Just life, not a person, just energy, not a person, just vitality, not a person, just existence, not a person. So how can you create a relationship with the divine? How can you create any relationship with the original source of life. When you don't have any face, how can the divine have any face? The divine is faceless. The divine has no face. He need not have any. The divine is just pure existence with no body and no face. So you cannot be related personally. Religions have talked in terms of personal relationship. Some religions call that God is father, mother, brother, beloved, or anything you wish. But they go on thinking in terms of relationship, to be related. They go on thinking in terms of anthropocentric attitude. Father is a human relationship. Brother, mother, beloved, all relationships are human. You think in terms of relationship with the divine, you miss the point, because the divine is not a person and there is no possibility of personal relationship. That's why Upanishads never call God the father. They never call God the mother. They never call God the beloved or the lover. They simply call God that, tat. This word that is very basic to Upanishadic teaching and philosophy. When you call that, it gives no sense of personality. When you call existence that, you cannot be related to it. No possibility how you can be related to that. You cannot be related to that. What does it mean? Does it mean that you cannot be really related to the divine? No. But this shows that to be related with the divine is going to be altogether a different relationship. The quality cannot be human. Rather, on the contrary, relationship with the divine is going to be the very reverse of human relationship. When I am related to someone as husband and wife, our brother and sister, our father and son, two are needed in any relationship. Relationship can exist only between two points, two relators. This is how human relationship exists, between two. It is a flow, a bridge, between two. It is dual. Human relationship is dual. Two points are needed, then it can exist between these two. But with that, pure existence, divine, our God, you cannot be related in a dual way. You can be related only when you become one. You can be related only when you are no more. Until you are, there can be no relationship. When you are not, then you are related. But then the very word becomes absurd, because relation always means between two. How can there be relationship when only one exists? But this is the reverse of relationship. To call divine that indicates many things. There are many implications. One, you cannot be related in the ordinary sense of relationship with the divine. You can be related in a very extraordinary sense, absurd sense, when you have become one. Secondly, You cannot worship that. That's impossible. Upanishads don't say, don't preach any worship, any prayer. No. It will be good to understand the difference between prayer and meditation. Upanishads teach meditation, never prayer. Prayer is always personal, a dialogue between you and the divine. But how can you have a dialogue with that? Impossible. The person must be there, only then a dialogue is possible. One of the greatest Jewish thinkers of this age, Martin Buber, has written a book, I and Thou. Jewish thinking is dual, just the contrary of the Upanishadic thinking. Buber says, I and Thou, this is the basic relationship between man and man, and between man and divine also. Because this is the only relationship, I and Thou. When you stand before God as I, and God becomes Thou, you are related. Buber says, then when God becomes Thou, you are in love. Upanishads will not agree. They say, if God is Thou, then you are still there to call Him Thou. The I exists, and I is the barrier. The ego exists, and the ego cannot be related. And if you think that the ego is related to the divine, then this thinking is false and pseudo. Really, you are in imagination. God, if becomes Thou, it is imaginary. Upanishads say that, but we can say I and Thou. We cannot say I and that, because there is no relationship between I and that. I must drop, only then the that evolves, arises. With the dropping of the I, the that is born. It is there, but the I is a barrier. When the barrier drops, you realize for the first time existence as it is, that which is. So Upanishads always call the ultimate truth as that, tat. Second thing to be understood in this sutra is that the nature of that is Sat-Chit-Anand. Sat-Chit-Anand. Sat means existence, Chit means consciousness, Ananda means bliss. These three are the attributes of that. It exists, it is conscious, and it is bliss. The very nature of it is bliss. If you can attain these three qualities, you have attained that. You exist, go deep. Everyone says, I exist. You were a child and you said, I exist. Where is that existence now? You have become young. You again say, I exist. You will become old. The child said, I exist. The young man said, I exist. The old man says, I exist. And the child is no more, and the young is no more. And the old is dropping himself, disappearing. Who says, I exist? Who is that which goes on existing? Childhood transforms into young age, young age into old age, life becomes that. Who is that which says, I exist? Have you known it? When you say, I exist, you always identify your I with the state you are in. If you are a child, you mean I, the child, exist. If you are old, you mean I, the old man, exist. If you say I, and if you are a man, you mean man exists. If you are a woman, you mean I exist, a woman exists. Always the state is identified with the I, and states go on changing. So really you have not known that which exists. You have known only that which goes on changing. Upanishads say that which goes on changing is not existential. It is dream-like. That which is always eternal is existential. So attain in yourself the point, the center, which can say, I exist, never changing, eternal, absolutely eternal. If you can attain this point of existence, you will attain the two automatically, immediately. You will become absolutely conscious. You will become absolutely filled with bliss. Or try from other roots. These are three attributes. So there can be three basic roots. Either attain to existence, then the other two will follow. Or attain to any other, one of the two, and the remaining two will follow. Attain to consciousness. Become fully conscious. You are not. We are asleep, unconscious, moving as if in somnambulism, asleep. You are doing things like automata. Look at a man eating. He is eating here. His mind is not here. His mind may be in his office or somewhere else. If the mind is not here, then he is eating in his sleep. It has become a routine. So he is going on. You are walking. Your legs are walking, but you are not in the legs. You are no more there. You have already reached the goal where legs have to reach. Or you may be lagging behind. But you are not there with the legs, conscious, fully, that I am moving, walking, eating. Attain to consciousness. Whatsoever you do, do with full conscious mind, mindful, aware, alert. If for a single moment you can be totally aware, with no sleep inside anywhere, with no unconscious mind in your being, if you have become fully conscious, you have become enlightened. The other two will follow immediately. Immediately. It is not good to say follow. They will happen immediately. There will be no following. Immediately. Yugapat. The very moment you are fully conscious, you will be existence, absolute, eternal, and you will be bliss, total. Or try to be blissful. Don't allow your consciousness to be vulnerable to misery. Don't allow your consciousness weakness to be miserable. Be strong. Resist the temptation of falling into misery. We all have temptations to fall into misery. There are reasons, psychological. Because when you are miserable, people pay more attention to you. A child is sick, then the whole family moves around. When the child is not sick, no one cares. The child learns the trick. Be miserable, be ill, and then the whole world will just go around you. It never goes, but man goes on trying. Do you remember that when you are sick, you have a certain enjoyment in it, a certain satisfaction, Now, you can throw everything on your sickness. Your business is failing. So what can you do? You are sick. Your mind is not working well. What can you do? You are sick. Now you can throw everything on your sickness. And when you are sick, you become a dictator. Now your wife has to follow, your brother has to follow, your children. You are sick. So old man says to his children, I am old man, I am sick, I am going to die. This creates authority. He says, you have to listen to me. We have investments in misery. That's why we go on inviting misery. If misery is not coming, we become miserable. No misery. Then where to stint? What to do? When you are in misery, going from one doctor to another, you feel good. You feel good. I have heard about a great surgeon, Kenneth Walker. He has written somewhere that he was studying with his teacher. He was studying surgery with his teacher. The teacher was a very well-known professor. One day, he was sitting, taking some notes, and a patient came to the great doctor, his professor. And the professor said, where you have been? For 2 years I have not seen. Have you been sick? For 2 years I have not seen you. Have you been sick? Of course, when people fall sick, they cannot come to the doctor. Those who come are enjoying the trip. They go on changing doctors from this to that. And they go on telling that I have been to this doctor and to that, and no one can help me, I am incurable. I have defeated all the doctors. I know in a different way. Many people come to me, they say, I have been to this guru, I have been to that Mahatma, I have been to this and that, and nothing happens. They have defeated all. Now they have come to defeat me. Nothing happens. Can you do something? As if someone else is responsible for them, that nothing happens. Really, if something happens, they will become miserable. Now they cannot go anywhere else. Now they cannot say, I have been to this man and nothing happens. They will become miserable. If something happens, they continue. Feel blissful. Don't allow yourself to be miserable. Don't help yourself to be miserable. Don't cooperate with misery. Resist the temptation. It is very alluring. Resist it. And try to be blissful in every state of mind. Whatsoever happens outside, don't allow it to disturb your bliss. Go on being blissful. I will tell you one anecdote. Chuang Tse, one of the great Taoists of China, was sitting before his hut, playing on an instrument and singing. Just this very morning, his wife has died, and he was singing. The emperor came just to give consolations to Chuang Tse. Chuang Tse was a great man, and the emperor respected him very much. It was rare that the emperor should come to a fakir, a poor man. But the emperor felt very awkward when he saw that he was singing and laughing and sitting on the tree alone. But he had come, and he must have prepared, as many of you know by experience, when someone is dead, someone has died and you go, you prepare the whole dialogue. what is to be said, how to console, and how to escape immediately. It is a duty to be done, and a very ugly duty. Someone has died and you have to do something, to say something, go there, make a face, be sad, and then escape. The king was prepared, but this Chuang Tzu disturbed everything. The king came, he saw Chuang Tzu laughing and singing and playing on some instrument. He felt very awkward. All that he had thought now could not be said. He was not sad at all, as if there has been no death, or he seems even to be celebrating. So the king said that, Chuang Tse, I know you are a great sage, but it is enough, more than enough, not to be sad. But this is going too far to celebrate. Don't be sad, that's enough. Suits to a saint, but this is going too far. Your wife has died this very morning, and what are you doing? Singing, laughing, and you look so cheerful. Is it your marriage day? Are you going to be married again? What are you doing? Chuang Tse said, I have made a vow to my teachers that I will remain blissful. Whatsoever happens, it is not going to disturb my bliss. So whatsoever happens, I always interpret it in such a way that it helps me to be blissful. Remember, everything is an interpretation. If you want to be miserable, you will interpret it in that way. Everything. If you want to be blissful, the same situation will be interpreted in a different way. So the king says, please let me know, because I have too many wives, and sometimes wives die. So tell me the trick, the secret. How can you be blissful in such a state? So Chuang Tse said, everything that happens there outside happens outside. It is not happening inside. One has to remember constantly. And whatsoever is happening outside need not disturb you, because you are not the outside. You are the inside. So a division, a remembrance, a constant mindfulness, and always look at life with total acceptability, then you can never be miserable. My wife has died, everyone has to die. Sooner or later, I will die also. So death is part of life. Once you are born, you will die. So nothing untoward has happened. Just natural phenomena. Just a natural process. Secondly, my wife was ill, old, suffering. My wife only has not died, her oldness, her suffering has also died. And this was worth, this death was worth. Now she is at ease. When I saw her face, dead, this was the first time in my life I saw her blissful. She was never so blissful. So I am celebrating the event. At last, even my wife is blissful. Interpretations. And moreover, Chuang Tse is reported to have said, this is the last time, the departure day, She was with me for so long, and she helped me and served me and made my life in many, many ways pleasant, happy, enjoyable. So what do you think? Should not I pay my gratitude, my respects, my thanks on the day of departure, the great departure? I am celebrating all the memories, all the pleasant memories that are associated with my wife. I am singing. It depends. If you try to be blissful continuously, if you don't allow yourself to disturb yourself, if you remain centered in your being, undisturbed, unwavering, immediately the two other will happen. You will attain existence and you will attain consciousness. These are three paths. To be blissful is one path. Many have tried this. To be conscious is another path, one of the most followed. Mahavir, Buddha, they all follow the path of to be conscious. To be existence, that too. The third path. These are the three basic paths. And they are basic paths because these three are the attributes of the ultimate reality. Any attribute followed, it becomes a river. You flow into it and move into the divine, into the supreme ocean. These three rivers fall there. Really, it is just a symbol. We have been thinking of, in our mythology, of Ganga, Jamuna, Saraswati, these three rivers as sacred rivers. These are the three rivers, three paths. Ganga and Jamuna are visible and the Saraswati has become invisible. The path of bliss will be visible. Whosoever follows the path of bliss will be known everywhere because his bliss will be coming out and flowing. His eyes, his movements, everything will be a blissful gesture. You cannot hide your bliss. That's impossible. The man who follows the path of consciousness will also be visible because his very effort to be conscious continuously will give a very strange look to his features, to his movements, to his gestures. He will move consciously. His every step will be conscious and you can see him. You can see a Buddha walking. He walks differently. You can see a Buddha speaking. He speaks differently. Every gesture is conscious. When every gesture is conscious, it gives a different quality to every movement. It cannot be invisible. It becomes visible. These are the Ganga and Jamuna. And Saraswati is invisible, the path of existence, who simply goes on inside remembering who is that which exists will not be known. You cannot feel him from outside. So those who have followed the path of existence are the unknown masters. They are not known ordinarily. Unless one goes in deep search for them, they are not known. Sufis have been following this third path, Saraswati, the invisible, the river which no one can see. So if you ask any Sufi, where is your master? You may be sent to a cobbler, or to a tailor, or to a sweeper. No one knows, even his neighborhood has never known that he is a master. He is just a cobbler. And even you cannot see how this man is a master. But you will have to live for 2, 3 years, 5 years with him, in his vicinity, in his presence, and then by and by you will become aware this man is different. But his difference has to be felt. It takes time. It is deep, invisible. These are the three paths, and three only, because three are the attributes of the divine, of the absolute, are of existence.